I'm Lin-Manuel Miranda, and you're listening to Hard Knock Life.
Well, it's the NOC in full color. You see me? The Hard Knock Life. Comics, movies, and TV.
Yeah. Welcome to Hard Knock Life. I'm Keith Chow.
I'm Brittany Monet.
I'm Dominic Ma.
So how was everyone's Batman Day?
Oh, Batman Day.
How did you celebrate our Lord and Savior, Bruce Wayne?
Well, I didn't realize it was Batman Day. Kind of funny because I was at Target because I needed to buy a box of hair dye. And then while I was waiting to check out, I was like, oh, the Batman was right there. So I bought the Batman Blu-ray.
Well, there you go. That's how you celebrate
the Batman. I did, but I didn't realize it was Batman Day. It was one of those, like, you know, waiting with my hair dye, and I bought like pumpkin cream cold brew and just waiting in line.
And Arbats on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, let me get by this. So it's just kind of funny it worked out that way.
There you go. Dominic, how did you celebrate the Dark Knight?
I was in a bar and someone told me the whole scene from the end of The Killing Joke, or like recounted like his love for this scene. Now, you watched the animated series, right? I haven't watched so much. Do you remember one where they replay the scene from the last part of The Killing Joke where Joker tells the joke about the flashlight?
In Batman the Animated Series?
Yeah, in Batman the Animated Series, not in The Killing Joke animated movie.
The terrible animated movie, yeah.
Right. I'm just asking if you remember that.
I feel like that's something I would remember, but I don't recall.
Oh, because in this bar conversation, yeah, he was going off what a great scene this was, and he said, I saw it Saturday morning as a kid, and I was like, you couldn't have seen The Killing Joke on a Saturday morning as a kid. But it seems to be fully possible that they grabbed that one part of The Killing Joke. I'm talking about the comic. I'm talking about the part at the end where Joker tells a joke about a flashlight and Batman actually laughs. It's great. It's a great scene.
I mean, there might be some homage where like Batman and Joker are in a cell and something like that happens. I don't know that it's quite the same joke. I don't know. It's good to anyway, me. Who knows?
It's not a big deal. You know, long story short, I had a conversation in a bar with a guy about Batman and the Joker.
Well, there you go.
And that felt very on point.
What better way to celebrate Batman Day? I watched a couple of kids' cartoons. I saw The Secret Origin of the Batwheels. I wrote a review for The Nerds of Color. It's this new preschool cartoon featuring the Bat family and their vehicles gain sentience and become, you know, Lightning McQueen versions of the Batmobile, you know?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And it's for like 5-year-olds. You know, I don't want to hear like Batman nerds complaining that this is not accurate to the comics or whatever, because it's for it's to introduce Batman to a whole new generation of kids who by 5 years old should be fully entrenched in the world of Batman like I was with Super Friends.
Well, since you've seen it, how is the Batmobile's character? I mean, is he husky and gruff? No. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a cute show. The thing I appreciate about it, honestly, is that the human versions of the characters that are in it are pretty cool, because it's the Duke Thomas version of Robin, and it's the Cassandra Cain version of Batgirl, except she's wearing the Burnside Batgirl costume, and she speaks, but she's Asian American, and she's voiced by Leah Lewis from Nancy Drew and the movie The Half of It.
Okay.
She voices Batgirl. Ethan Hawke voices Batman. That's fucking cool.
All right.
You know, when the cars become, you know, sentient, it becomes a little bit more kid friendly. I mean, it's a kid friendly show. I liked it. The other thing that was kind of cool this weekend was the Teen Titans Go cartoon did their Zack Snyder episode. It was really fun, actually. And Zack Snyder is a great sport for being on Teen Titans Go. And Teen Titans Go, like, I know it's funny, all the Snyder stands are now like singing the praises of Teen Titans Go, because they did treat the Snyder Cut with some reverence, as that show does. The thing about the Teen Titans Go cartoon is that a lot of people used to clown it when it was first came out, but it's some of the best DC content. You have to be a true DC fan to get a lot of the in-jokes in Teen Titans Go. You know, even before like Lego Batman and all that stuff, like they were really into like the satirical, making jokes, making fun of the DC universe writ large.
Yeah.
And then they're my favorite episodes, of course, are their De La Soul episodes, where they like really were making satirical commentary about De La Soul not owning the rights to their own music and fighting like this, you know, kaiju version of the record companies that stole their music, you know, like Teen Titans Go is the best.
And somehow weaving in all their album titles
into the script.
that episode was brilliant.
Yeah. So that's how I celebrate. I watch cartoons.
I mean, I bet Fall Out Boy has been on Teen Titans Go at some point. They're just that hip. They have, but I didn't see that one.
Because people were like, I think it was that show that they were on. Because I remember people sending me songs like, oh, your boys, they were on this cartoon. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I sure hope they made a joke about how Fall Out Boy sounds like he's the guy in Legion of Superheroes.
Fall Out Boy are Teen Titans Go characters.
Okay, someone had shown me, like, I think they did a special song for it or something.
Confirmed. Is that a pretty accurate depiction of your boys?
Yeah, that is.
Confirmed. Okay, Teen Titans Go is super hip.
Yeah,
and
it's a great show.
Delightful and fun.
Very good, very good. Well, since we're talking about DC, let's kick off with something that we didn't touch on last week because we were so wrapped up in D23. A bit of news came over the transom that, remember a couple weeks ago, we were all in on Dan Lin, no pun intended, all in on Dan Lin.
Mm-hmm.
I resurrected a bunch of old Jeremy Lin sanity jokes when he was rumored to be the next head of DC Films, the Kevin Feige of the DC Universe. Well, it turns out he didn't want the job. He almost had the job, but it came down to his production company. Basically, they couldn't negotiate around what would happen to Rideback, which is his production company and / nonprofit organization that helps bring diverse talent to Hollywood. So now we are still leaderless in the world of DC movies and TV. And then there was a new article in the Hollywood Reporter this week that kind of intimated that perhaps Zaslav, the CEO of Discovery, who is now the boss at Warner Brothers, is just kind of like biding his time to actually sell Warner Brothers yet again in a couple years. Because if anything, people love to do with Warner Brothers is just pass it around like a hot potato.
Yeah, apparently.
And the idea is perhaps Universal and Comcast buys Warner Brothers in 2024. That's kind of
funny because Universal Studios and Warner Brothers aren't that far from each other. They're like less than a mile from each other. Especially if you're going to the back studio of Universal Studios, if you're like an actor or someone working on a project, like you can see the back part of the studio from where like you would come down the street from Warner Brothers. So it's not that far from each other.
They'll just expand their campus to take up both lots, I guess.
So that would be another super merger.
I mean, aside from like the fact that you're consolidating even more legacy movie studios, we don't love that. Again, this is all speculation and rumor. But I wouldn't be surprised, right? Because as we've talked about many, many times in this podcast, people like Warner Brothers, one of the crown jewel of all movie studios in Hollywood. This goes back to my whole Warner Max shit, right? Like I have reverence for the studio writ large, but for it to be kind of just passed around again and for Universal.
They're just being flipped like a cheap house.
Yeah. Like
like a Discovery Channel show about media giant empire flipping.
Yeah, that's the new reality show. Well, if it happens, and we're not saying it will, but if it does, like, should we be concerned that there would now be like only two movie studios? You have Disney Fox and Universal Warner Brothers. Like,
yeah,
that's it. That's the only two games in town.
It's very concerning. There used to be so many different like studios. Now it's like some of them are sub studios of other of those studios, and now they're all combined. So yeah, it's just crazy. But
no, it's the way of the future, man. I mean, not saying it's a good future, but who is the futurist who predicted that someday there'll just be one giant movie per year that everyone sees? All going in that direction.
Yeah.
I hope not.
And that's not good at all. That was a, exaggerated for effect idea, but that is the trend of, consolidation and quote unquote efficientization of capitalist ventures and blah, blah, blah. But also, whatever, man, Universal has the Hulk rights still in some weird way. And so
you're still hung up on Incredible Hulk being on.
I rewatched even more of that in the future. The other day, I watched Incredible Hulk on HBO Max. the origin point of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And you just could not wrap your head around
it was really entertaining. I know how you feel about Edward Norton, but like in retrospect, with the benefit of time, it was really entertaining because they hadn't worked out all this shit yet. So it wasn't like all cliche.
But then it recommended to watch like a Batman movie afterwards, which kind of blew your mind, right?
Yeah, totally.
if you like Incredible Hulk, perhaps
you might also like our 8 Batman movies. We only have one Hulk movie. We're not saying where that one led to.
But I guess like that's the, you know, like part of the, again, the speculation, this is all speculation off a Hollywood Reporter story, but it makes sense for Universal because of like their connection to the Wizarding World already, with Harry Potter being such a big part of the Universal Studios theme parks. I mean, you know, at the same time, it's like the monopolization is concerning to me. Like, I know that sometimes like when fanboys talk about this stuff, like they forget about like how shitty capitalism is, because I remember when like the whole Disney buying Fox thing was like, oh, we finally get the X-Men, and not like, this sucks for like people who work at both studios, you know, and then choice in the market and everything like that. So
yeah, no, I mean, there's a good cartoon about that. I can't remember what the plot is, but it's just like saying, yeah, what you're saying, we're ignoring the macroeconomic effects in the world because we're like, oh yeah, that'll make it really easy to have an X-Men movie. That's right. What I want.
And we still haven't got one yet.
Right.
So basically that whole thing is kind of part and parcel with not only Dan Lin passing on leading DC films, but also WB's difficulty in finding someone, because they did, you know, put all of their eggs in the Dan Lin basket. And when he passed, there's been speculation that they're not able to find someone to take his place and be the leader of the DC arm. And I just wonder, you know, again, DC's been kind of dysfunctional for years. How is this going to like continue this whole 10-year plan of the DC universe? And of course, we're also on the heels of the announcement that they're still making DC movies. Remember, Matt Reeves got a whole exclusive deal to continue making Batman movies. James Gunn has been on the record saying he's doing more Suicide Squad stuff and Peacemaker stuff, bringing Harley Quinn back. And this week they announced, after 17 years, a sequel to the Keanu Reeves Constantine movie.
Oh, coming down the that's pike. Great.
So yeah, I'm guessing I'm back, is what Keanu is saying as John Constantine.
Oh yeah, that
John Wickstantine, I guess, will be the name of the sequel.
I'm not a big Constantine follower. Haven't we had the like 3 versions of Constantine since then that in various media that were considered like cool?
I think Matt Ryan was great. I'm on the train that Matt Ryan was a really great Constantine.
In which one is it? Which one's that one?
He so they had like the, I think it was a CBS show.
In the TV one.
Then yeah. He crossed over with Supernatural. Was it Supernatural first or Arrow?
Arrow. And I don't think he was ever on Supernatural, was it?
I think they were trying to make a crossover where he would be on Supernatural, right. But I don't think it ever actually happened. Then he had like an animated show where he was still voicing the character, then eventually they just brought him into the like CW verse proper, because he was supposed to be from like a different universe or something.
But then he was on Legends of Tomorrow for several seasons.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the Daredevil problem, where like they brought Matt Ryan's Constantine into the Arrowverse, but they were kind of cagey about whether or not his NBC show was canon or not. So like they never said anything that you know, disqualified his own show, but they never said anything that was like the stuff that happened on that show was part of the Arrowverse. It's kind of like funny how like the CW uses their DC characters. But anyway, yeah, to your point, Constantine's been in the pop culture zeitgeist since Keanu Reeves. And I feel like a lot of people have forgotten about the Keanu Reeves Constantine. And it's interesting that like the reaction to the sequel kind of surprised me, because I remember when the movie came out in 2005, that was the year of Batman Begins, remember? And there was a lot of like chatter in the nerd space back then. This was a pre kind of like, you know, social media version of the internet, where people didn't like Keanu's Constantine because, one, he wasn't British, and two, he wasn't blonde. Remember that? Remember when people were pissed off at an American Constantine? But now everyone loves it. So it's kind of cool, like, you know, that he's back, but
because of the Keanu sans.
Yeah, because of the continued Keanu sans.
I think it's because a lot of like people my age who really like the movie probably weren't as active on like the you know, boards right. and stuff like that.
Because you're like so 12 like, or whatever.
I was 15 when that came out.
Either way, that still makes me super angry.
I was on MySpace.
Yeah, a lot of Constantine Shatter on MySpace. Remember so, those days?
I don't know, but you know, I did like that movie a lot, but I always remember because like I was like the scene with Rachel Weisz. And then she's on the roof. But anyways, yeah, I think it's just funny because like telling you before we recorded that when we did a Lituation Room with like Vanessa and everyone, Vanessa had brought up how much she likes that Constantine movie. And then like 2 days later, they announced that they were doing a sequel. So.
Vanessa Shark is the Nexus being of the DC Ooh. Universe.
So is she yeah. excited?
Oh, yeah. She liked that movie. So she's really yeah. excited. So.
Good. Someone is. I mean... I'm sorry. I think at this point they're just announcing shit. They've already right. set up the trope, if you will, that will announce expensive shit and then cancel it. So now they're just freaking announcing shit and who knows, whatever. But
that's a good point. That's an excellent point.
And I also want to say, and it's fun. It's fun gossip. And I'll say I don't want to get too hung up on like if like some producer level guy will come and like head up the DC films. I mean, we understand it works on Marvel Studios side. It works and that Kevin Feige has centralized some power. I don't want to get hung up on like that's the answer to the problems. It works in that case. I mean, it would be the answer to problems if it was someone who like has really good ideas, is creative, and you know, sort of responsive to the community to some degree. Like a Vanessa Shark, you know.
Yes, just campaign Vanessa Shark charge. To be the head of DC Films.
I mean, they might as much as anyone else, because obviously the decisions like are so, you know,
haphazard.
Are so random, it doesn't matter like what level of experience or what field you come from. They should just grab someone or not. I mean, I'm just saying, let's not get hung up on like, you know, will someone come in and save DC side by being like Kevin Feige, because I think that's sort of a false, you know, a false goal, a false choice.
Well, I think Vanessa and like Kevin is a genuine, she actually is a genuine fan of the comics, like their source material. So I feel like, you know, she probably honestly wouldn't be a bad choice. And she knows how marketing, because she got her like degree in marketing. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, Vanessa could be actually a really good choice.
David Zaslav, if you're listening.
I'm just throwing it out there as a pie in the sky thing.
And, you know, like, I think to your point about, like, the randomness of Warner Brothers DC strategy right now is, you know, like, what movies are coming out? Well, we know Black Adam's coming out in about a month, actually, unless something changes. And we know The Flash is coming out somehow. That those are the only two movies that are guaranteed to be coming out in the next 6 to 8 months. What has been announced? Well, now there's been a Constantine sequel that's been announced. There's been a Joker sequel that's been announced, and the Batman sequel has been announced. Those three things are in the pipeline. Other than that, I mean, Aquaman went back for reshoots. That may or may not come out at this point. And, you know, Shazam, that got delayed. I'm sure that's still coming out, but at this point, again, nothing is guaranteed. Last week was the Emmys. And Michael Keaton won an Emmy for the lead of Dope Sick. And then Brendan Fraser won an award at the Toronto Film Festival last week. And both actors were, you know, asked about Batgirl, since they were two prominent stars of that film. And they were both like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Like, are we ever going to see you in a Batman movie again? Like, I don't know. And so, like, it is kind of like, it's a weird time to be a fan of Batman. And again, like, the Snyder stands are kind of like grasping at straws. They see Zach on Teen Titans Go. They're like actually cheering at this news, because they feel like if Universal takes over, maybe they'll give it the reins back to Snyder and we'll hashtag restore the Snyderverse. So, I mean, I think it's a lot of wish casting and a lot of kind of like throw that shit against the wall, see what sticks at this point.
Man. Crisis on Infinite Earths again.
Crisis on Infinite Studios is where we are with Warner Brothers, as is the case. That's that on that. We're not going to belabor the point anymore talking about Warner Brothers and that shit. Oh, I will add one more thing and a different approach to the Zaslav take on not just DC, but like every IP that they own currently at Warner Brothers. And his approach is very different from most of the streamers and studios. As you recall, my issue with HBO Max has always been they have this amazing catalog and library. Why not take advantage of it? Well, this is another Hollywood Reporter story. David Zaslav has the opposite view. He's like, we own all this IP. Let's sell this shit. Let's license this shit and make money off of it. Let's not hoard it all for our own library, which is the Disney way, right? Disney has consolidated all of their properties into one place, Disney Plus. You want to watch a Disney thing? You got to go to Disney Plus. Zaslav is basically saying, you want Batman? I will sell it to the highest bidder. Because remember when they canceled, you know, you mentioned Batman, the animated series. Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves was working on a reboot of that animated series. It was going to be one of the biggest things on HBO Max. And then they announced, oh, we're not doing that anymore, but we're not canceling it like Batgirl. We're going to sell it to the highest bidder. So I think Hulu, Netflix, maybe Apple, those are the three streamers that may be getting Batman, Caped Crusader, which is their new take on the animated series.
I think that it's just so crazy that he's willing to sell everything, because it's like, Disney might always be the highest bidder if they want it.
Can you? What if, like, Disney buys DC?
No, they cannot cross that line.
Or they I wouldn't put it behind them. They might find their own, you know, DC Kevin Feige do too. But it's just
What if the DC Kevin Feige is Kevin Feige?
Oh my god!
You know, I mean, that this is what we're all leading up to in some not too far away future. Again, like, part of, if there were just two major forces, it would kind of recall the days of comic books when there was just DC Marvel, which is kind of how this podcast is structured.
The DC happened to Marvel.
Yeah. And then, you know, but in our lifetimes, we are leading up to the ultimate DC Marvel crossover, and that'll probably happen one way or the other. It might not happen in a pretty way. Like in freaking the comic Doomsday Clock, you know, Jeff Johns wrote it for, you know, predicting, you know, the secret crisis, quote unquote, that will unfold at some alternate future and involve, you know, Dr. Manhattan and Superman fighting the Hulk. And that would be worth it.
I mean, we had the Amalgam Universe. It's we're not, you know, if we get Super Soldier versus the Legend of the Dark Claw.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to get that.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the extreme of the way too hyper excited fanboy here and go like, that would be awesome. We should consolidate every single company so I can have a Secret Crisis movie. It'd be so cool, dude, because then Green Lantern could meet Spider-Man and it would all be done by one dude and he would get all the money to make one movie. It would be so cool. He'd make it for $5 billion. I was doing a bit there. Yeah, and when we got that.
Yeah. It does demonstrate mankind's like gravitation towards like authoritarianism, because we just like we just want to follow one benevolent leader.
Yeah, I don't care. There's possibility. I just think I would follow Kathy Yan. I'd follow.
There you go. Yeah, it just depends on who the benevolent leader is.
I'd follow Catherine Bigelow if they put her in charge of DC movies. I don't think she wants to do it, but
yeah. Awesome. All right, anyway. That's enough about DC. Let's take a break, and on the other side, We'll talk about the other elephant in the room, and that's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Guess what? Goalie Nutrition is sponsoring Hard Knock Life, and you can go to goalie.com to buy apple cider vinegar gummies, their ashwagandha gummies, super fruit gummies, and super greens gummies, and you get 10% off plus free shipping if you use the code HARDKNOCK at goalie.com. This is honestly, I've been taking the Goalie gummies now for a couple weeks, and I have to say, they're tasty and they're good for you. Have you guys been enjoying the Goalie gummies?
I really like them. They're yummy, but it's a nice to add to my like routine of already, like, I normally take just straight vitamin C. So it's nice to have like extra supplements.
For a long time, people have praised the benefits of apple cider vinegar. And, you know, as someone who's had to like drink straight apple cider vinegar sometimes when I'm not feeling well, or, you know, I have some joint pain and your mom is like, drink some apple cider vinegar. It's not the most appetizing home remedy, let's just say.
No, right. It tastes horrible.
So, like, the apple cider part is like, ooh, does it taste like apple cider? It is like, no, it tastes like vinegar. But ACV is very good for you. And the fact that Goalie has been able to put the ACV into these tasty little gummies made with pectin and fruit peels, which make them vegan, which is cool. So if you're vegan, you can still rock these gummies, because everyone knows gummies are usually made out of like gelatin and nasty shit. These are made out of complete non-GMO, gelatin-free, gluten-free, vegan ingredients, and you can get the benefits, all of the benefits of apple cider vinegar taking these tasty, delicious, convenient gummies. So go to goalie.com and use the code HARDKNOCK, that's HARDNOC, just like the podcast you're listening to. Get 10% off your purchase of Goalie products and free shipping.
It's a much better delivery device for that apple cider vinegar.
Yeah.
These Goalie gummies are great. You get it, and it's a delicious little candy. And I've been enjoying the Superfruits one. I did feel kind of refreshed after taking a few of those.
Yeah, no, but I'm loving them so far, and they're definitely tasty. If you just want tasty gummies, at least just eat them for the yummiest.
Yeah. So go to goalie.com, use the code HARDKNOCK, HARDNOC, get 10% off your purchase and free shipping at goalie.com with the code HARDKNOCK. HARDKNOCK Life is being sponsored by Athletic Greens. I want to talk to you about Athletic Greens. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Basically all the things. One of the best things about Athletic Greens is that it's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar and no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes good. Athletic Greens uses the best of the best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day, that's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is partnering with Hard Knock Media to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. That's athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. I wasn't really feeling this week's She-Hulk. Am I the only one? When it ended, I was like, oh, it's over already? I really wasn't paying that much attention.
I actually have been liking the last several episodes more than I really did the first episode. I just was kind of sad that there was an after credit scene, because like every single episode has had a little mini after credit scene. Even if the after scene was kind of pointless, it was just like, okay. Then this one, they didn't have one. And I almost
feel like the Daredevil helmet should have been the post credit scene.
It should have been. Yeah. Cause I was just like, I don't know. I really like when they have Josh Segura on the show a lot. I loved him a lot when he was on Arrow. So.
Wait, yeah. Which is that?
He's Pug. He's the other lawyer. But in this one, he's the one who's got a thing for Iron Man 3s and bootleg Avengers merchandise.
Mm.
That was really funny.
Avengers.
I like that whole bit with him. That was good.
I have a contrary opinion. I was complaining about how there are so many side characters in this show, and he's the one I don't want to see ever again. If the show if he dies in the next episode at the beginning, I'll be like, fine. This, because I understand you need the character of a sort of bro-y lawyer to set up the legal workplace, but there are so many of these freaking side characters, and that's the one we have to spend more time with. Just saying. That is my contrary opinion.
This was probably my least favorite of the one. I was going to say, though, I appreciate seeing Renee Elise Goldsberry. I always love seeing Angelica Schuyler on my screen, and she did not disappoint. But if this is the Titanium, I thought Titanium would be a more interesting villain, but it is ironic that Jamila Jamil is playing her, and I love that she's kind of like making fun of the Kardashians, basically, which is what she does on Instagram.
I know.
So it was great. That was kind of cool.
I really liked her Valley Girl American accent, because I'm used to her.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I think that was cool. But
yeah, I'm appreciating Jamila Jamil's American act, because a couple weeks ago I mentioned she voices Wonder Woman on the Super Pets movie, and she uses an American accent for that, and I was surprised, because when Wonder Woman shows up in Super Pets, she doesn't sound like Tahani. It threw me off for a second. I was like, I thought Jamila Jamil was Wonder Woman, but I guess she's been perfecting her non-British accent for a while now. So
I thought this episode had some fun things, but they were mainly meta things. For example, there was a little gratuitous Mandarin spoken at the costume shop, which was, I'll just note, was way better than the gratuitous Mandarin in Moon Knight, just by a lot, from my Chinese one, a, you know, poor Mandarin speaker's perspective. So that's fine. There's a little Asian American joke.
Not all Asians are alike either. So the Asian can also be prejudiced against the other Asian, which
that that was the point. Like, different Asians interacting, not all Asians speak Chinese. That's very, very Asian American situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's awkward. The radar's off sometimes. But it sold better that when she actually spoke like a functioning line of Mandarin as opposed to two unintelligible lines of Mandarin, which is what happened in Moon Knight. That was an affront because the people were like, we're speaking Mandarin. And it's like, no, you're not. So anyway, verisimilitude, it matters. You know, cousin Stephanie, the lawyer, chimed in again to say that, like, I hope no one's like learning legal practice from this show, because that's not how trademark court battles work at all. But it was, you know, funny for the.
So you don't just bring a string of your Tinder dates into the witness stand to prove that you own the copyright of your name? That's not how that works.
Yeah, no. And also there's the issue of whether you're making money off it or not. There's like copyright and trademark has more to do with making money. It's not just asserting that like you have the name, but that you've been using it for a commercial purpose.
Because I almost feel like Titania was in the right, because she was smart enough to copyright She-Hulk as a product.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not as my name, right? So, she probably should have won that case.
So that brings us to another meta joke that's in this episode, which I don't know if too many people have talked about, which is that it's kind of playing into the whole origin of She-Hulk in the first place. I think this is what the writers were hearkening back to, or if not, it's like just a funny accident. She-Hulk exists because of a trademark issue when she was first invented. This is my understanding of the story. Like, and I believe it's true. Sometime, I guess, in the 70s. So, okay, the origin of two of our favorite characters, She-Hulk and Spider-Woman, came about the same way. Because Marvel had these very popular characters, Hulk and Spider-Man, and someone realized, maybe Stan realized that, you know, someone could just invent a character called She-Hulk and call it theirs. Someone could just invent a Spider-Woman and call it theirs. Mm-hmm. So we got to jump in and invent these characters real quick and trademark them so that no one will do exactly what Titania does in this episode, which is go out and go like, that's a cool name. I'm going to buy that and sell some shit off of it. Because that's why, you know, Spider-Woman's origin originally doesn't have that much to do with Spider-Man. But for a legal reason, they were really motivated to create a Spider-Woman in She-Hulk character. So anyway, so it's kind of funny because the alternate version is exactly what Titania is doing. She just grabs the She-Hulk name and starts selling shit off of it that has nothing to do with She-Hulk the person.
And the other meta irony is that there actually is She-Hulk like makeup and beauty products that are being sold in conjunction with the show. So,
well, right. Yes, yeah. That's that's the the big capitalist irony, we could say. Like, isn't it funny we're making fun of people being mercantile on this show here? Buy some She-Hulk makeup. Yeah, that's okay. But I mean, you know, it's swag. Whatever.
Hey, if they want to send us free She-Hulk makeup,
and I will take it.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I like makeup.
A little bit taller. Yeah.
So we're setting up for Daredevil to show up next week. It's kind of interesting that Matt Murdock, remember how he had his costume created on his show? It was like with this dude in his building that kind of had like, I forgot the character's name in the Netflix show, but like he's kind of piecing Marvin. Together his
Melvin
or Melvin. Yeah, probably Melvin.
But now he just goes to the superhero designer to get his suit done.
Well, it's because he's in LA.
Yeah.
He needs a suit for LA. Oh, he needs to look a little bit more flashy.
Yeah. Does that explain why it's yellow?
Yeah.
Like, practical.
I think he's supposed to be looking for Jessica Jones, if I remember the detail correct about his character.
What, in this? And she?
Yes.
I hope so.
Damn. That's what the rumor was, that he's actually looking for Jessica Jones. So then he ends up hiring Jennifer Walters to help him. That's what I've heard. And then that, you know, Jessica Jones also will appear somewhere, but they're not showing that. I don't know. That's the rumor. I could be wrong.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, especially if it's Kristen Ritter. I think you'd be a little upset if it's a different actress.
No, it's Kristen Ritter.
That would be too much. Yeah, that would be too much a weird fake out. They couldn't do it. like that. They just couldn't. But okay, I'm glad that Marvel knows that Daredevil's a big deal. I mean, there's so much time seeding and hyping this Daredevil appearance thing. Honestly, I thought he was gonna like flip through for a cameo in the first episode.
Yeah, but he's getting his own like episode now, it seems like.
Yeah, well, and he's getting pumped up a lot. Like that he was the tag of this, he was the cliffhanger of this actual episode. And I'm just saying, I'm glad that they're not just treating it in an offhanded way, like let's throw Daredevil in there. Because to me, Daredevil is top tier. And, you know, because of the excellence of the show, it's, you know, I'm just saying, I think it's important that he remains treated like A tier Marvel for me.
I mean, that's true. If you think about, like, remember, Marvel Studios exists because they sold off all of their A tier characters.
Yeah.
One of those characters was Daredevil. Yeah. Right, like Daredevil was not a Marvel Studios character because Fox owned the rights, because they were like, okay, we're going to license out our most important characters, Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Daredevil. That's why we had the Ben Affleck movie 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
because that character was considered A-list, not B-list, not Thor, not Captain America, not Iron Man.
Yeah,
like we live in a post-Iron Man as A-list world, which is wild for fanboys who used to argue that people need to take Iron Man more seriously, and now Iron Man is probably the most popular superhero character. So funny that.
Yeah, it's weird stuff, but yeah, I mean, but Daredevil should get his respect. And you know, it's a funny thing because like he has the least flashy powers of any of these, you know, big Marvel superheroes, but he's just important, god damn it. I'm just saying Daredevil matters.
And now they're demonstrating that.
Yeah, and I'm a little, okay, and something else I want to complain about. I thought the costume-making character was a little cliche. I mean, he's all right. He was my favorite. I've already complained, like, they're way too, they keep bringing in side characters. Like, it's like, I want to stay with She-Hulk a little bit more. And just, again, in contrast with when you mentioned the costume-maker scene in Daredevil, those scenes with Melvin are, like, so touching. With the scenes where he's making Daredevil costume and some gear, they're so like intimate and meaningful, and I rewatch them all the time, and there's just this thing about, like, you know, the neighborhood and, you know, getting a local craftsman to help you make this ridiculous thing. And he actually sells the idea that he would make this ridiculous thing, this billy club. Why would someone make that? You believe that this guy like took 3 days to make Daredevil a steel weapon, and it's just beautiful. And I'm just contrasting that with, like, in this case, I thought it was kind of jokey. The, like, I do all the superhero costumes. I thought he was a bit cliche. So for that reason, I'm very interested with how the scenes will play out when it turns out for some reason he's making Daredevil's other suit.
And then apparently Matt Murdock is known as the Daredevil because he's like, do you have no respect for our client's privacy rights or whatever, just leaving this lying around kind of thing, you know? Like, so clearly someone in the fashion house knows Matt Murdock is,
oh yeah, but I think they all have NDAs in there.
Isn't Matt Murdock similar to Peter in the sense that, like, even though he's a lawyer, he's like mostly pro bono and struggles financially, but like,
mm-hmm.
he can afford this like top tier, like the Daredevil helmet inside like a hat box, which is kind of like, again, this leans more into the jokey nature of the MCU, but it is kind of like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, no,
all again, the costumes to put in a fancy hat box.
No, that's the thing, again, that's cognitive dissonance. Daredevil isn't like the kind of character who goes to the fancy LA boot designer, right? He got his costume because some guy in Hell's Kitchen neighborhood made it for him out of a sense of duty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a little off. So, but I mean, it's okay.
Does it give you pause for Born Again, though? Do you feel like, oh, is Born Again going to be less Netflixy and more
shooting? Oh, it's definitely gonna be less Netflixy. As soon as they said they were bringing on the whole new team, I was like, yeah, of course. It might not be as, like, say, kid friendly as most of the stuff they've done, but it's not gonna be Netflixy yet. I don't know. That's what it is, I think.
Maybe more like Moon Knight than,
yeah, maybe slightly above Moon Knight in terms of brutality and stuff, but not like, where, and
ultimately Moon Knight wasn't that brutal. Remember, we were like anticipating, oh shit, this is going to be like Disney Plus's first foray into Netflix territory.
Right.
Was they were pretty... like, we're not going to hold back. And I was like, okay.
No. Yeah, that was interesting, right? They didn't go all the way on the mind fuckiness. We kind of thought they would, but somehow they...
Yeah.
Hold back a little, which is, I guess, given me pause for this, you know, that set my mood of Marvel ennui and, like, you know, skepticism for this past whole couple of months. But yeah, for sure. Well, I'll just say it's years down the road. It'll just be really interesting to see Daredevil show up in this form as She-Hulk series. Hopefully it's just like a really funny bit, because Charlie Cox is also sort of like a funny deadpan guy. And
I mean, his scene in Spider-Man was pretty played for laughs too. It wasn't like filled with pathos that every Charlie Cox scene in the Netflix show is. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And I think that's perfectly good and appropriate to the genre.
I mean, the comics, Daredevil is often funny and sarcastic.
Totally.
I remember the I'm Not Daredevil t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Like, that's something that the Netflix Matt Murdock would never wear, but maybe the MCU Matt Murdock would wear. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, so maybe that t-shirt exists.
No, but do you know what I'm saying? Like, I say that as an example of the comics being a little bit more cheeky.
Right.
The Netflix
show. Yeah. And there were some jokes that the Netflix series would never do because it took itself a little seriously. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can strike a good balance there.
Yeah. I hope it's a happy medium.
Well, we'll see.
But yeah, wow. I mean, we just talked a lot about Daredevil instead of She-Hulk. Well, that's okay.
That's kind of like the point, right? Like, that's this episode too was focused less on Jen and more on everything else around her, which was kind of your issue with the episode.
Right, and it keeps me issue. They're just, then again, I think there's a little unused potential here with the obsession for cameos and bringing in side characters and following Pug. Sorry, I just like they did the Wrecking Crew thing. Oh, we're the Wrecking Crew now. They tease that whole Madison Wong thing. Oh no, let's move on to some different characters for this next episode. And all that beside the point that I like. At one point, we're talking about expectations again. I thought that this show would be a little bit like how I thought the Miss Marvel show was going to be, and that would be not so much about being superhero, but about what if you just had like a superpower that kind of made your body deformed, or just kind of made your body like a much different version of what you're used to, and all the pathos and interesting things that go with that. And of course they shied away from that in the Miss Marvel. But I liked the beginning of this episode when it was like, she's not so concerned with being a superhero, but like, she does have this thing of just like, oh, now I'm like sometimes my normal self. Now I'm this 8 foot tall, like muscly, like movie star hair lady. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff with that. If they would just stay with her and show stuff like her doing stuff around the house.
But, you know, I think that's a good point, because what's interesting about the She-Hulk comics is so much of it is her as a lawyer, as She-Hulk, the defense attorney. But this is something Brittany's brought up several times. It also could be a VFX problem. And because she is a fully CG character, one of the reasons why she's not center of attention in her own show is they're like, well, we can't use the CG that often. We really got to like save it for the set pieces, because her VFX is still a little wonky. Her and Renee Elise Goldsberry walking down the steps of the courthouse was... yikes,
that was very bad. Yeah.
Yeah,
it just frustrates me, because like I've said so many times, Tatiana is not the problem as an actress. It's just they really should have tried to find a taller, you know, muscular actress who also has the same sort of acting chops as Tati. Like, I'm pretty sure there's an actress out there who exists,
or at the very least I feel like have her body double be like a 7 foot woman.
Yeah.
So that, like, so that you're not having to animate like her all entire body,
right? Yeah, because it's all like, it's too much, and it just, to me, it does hold back the show a little bit, because, like I've said before, I'm like, they should have went with that casting, a different casting choice, because there's a point in the comics where she doesn't even look like Small Jen anymore. She's just always, you know, the normal She-Hulk form, and then sometimes she can Hulk out even more.
Right.
So that gets a point into the comics where that's what she does. So it's just, to me, I always thought it was pointless from the beginning to focus more on casting the smaller version of her, because I'm like, she's not going to stay like that. It's easier to do the Steve Rogers thing where you have the person who's there for when you need the small person, but most of the time it's Chris Evans and Bulk, you know? So it's just like, I don't know.
Yes, they could have done that. But okay, I'm just on contrary opinion, Dave, because I don't care about the VFX that much. But when you guys comment on the VFX, is it because like does it like put you in that uncanny valley space if you're just not believing the character anymore because
Yeah,
it's
it
kind of
takes me
glitchy?
out of the show.
Right. Okay, I get
And I
that.
think part of the problem is that, like, when you have a VFX heavy character, even with like Bruce Banner's Hulk, it's during an action scene, right? You're not like having the CG character kind of like interacting with the real space. So having Jen be in like an office or again walking down the steps of a courthouse, it just sticks out even more when the CG is off. If the CG is perfect, yeah. Like we were saying in the first episode, like for me, I felt like the CG worked more than people were led to believe just because that was all the chatter around the trailers. But then when you watched it, it was like, oh, it's not too bad. Maybe because it was two CG characters interacting with each other, so you kind of have that extra layer of disbelief. But when you have her interacting with real humans in a real space, it sticks out more when she's not perfect. And that's and again, you know, the stories of like how Marvel treats their VFX houses. You know, I am not faulting the VFX artists. They are under tremendous pressure to do on TV budgets. And that's the other thing. Like, we have to
It's on
remember.
Marvel because, like I said, they could have cast an actress who is tall and, you know, muscular, where they can maybe just use some camera tricks and some CGI, but not a lot where you're mainly relying on it. Because if you're not going to treat these artists correctly, where they're not going to be able to put in their best work, then it's just like, what is the point of it? And I hate that it takes me out of the certain moments in the show that probably would have hit better, would have been fun, but it takes you out of it. And you're just like, oh, it sucks because, like I said, She-Hulk is a fun character in the comics.
Like, just for purposes of argument again, and so I can understand. So, like, Lou Ferrigno, we don't believe he's the Hulk, right? But we understand he's the Hulk for the purposes of that show. You know what I mean? It's not like a convincing thing that he's painted green. I'm talking about what suspension of disbelief you do and when.
To me, like when you any kind of digital character, this is not just with She-Hulk. I think like because so much of like the way Spider-Man is portrayed in even the movies, like when he's 100% digital, I don't know, there is an uncanny that like there's a rubbery movement to the way he moves that like didn't have to be there. It's another example is when you watch the prequels and the clone troopers in the prequels versus when you see the clone troopers in Obi-Wan or The Mandalorian, right? Like I think Obi-Wan was the first time you saw a clone trooper in like actual clone armor that wasn't CG. And it's just they move different. They move like a person in a costume rather than like computer generated characters. And there's just a tactileness when you have someone who's interacting with the real space than being fully CG. And again, it's like we have the technology to create fully digital characters. We don't have to always use it. It's why I have an issue with the third act of Shang-Chi, right? When they stop being real humans and just start being like digital puppets in a digital space, I just tune out. I just check out. I don't. But like with the Batman or like a movie or like, you know, practical effects, there's just a different sense of verisimilitude and believability with practical sets and practical effects versus fully rendered digital effects. And maybe we'll see that, you know, Andor is coming out this week on Disney Plus. And I feel like that's a, you know, just from what I've seen of Andor, the tactile, the fact we talked about before, they go out on location to shoot and not shooting even in the volume.
Yeah, every single person, whether they've actually liked the whole show or not, they have said that it looks the best because you can tell that they've actually shot on like real sets and locations and that it's not in the volume. And not, I think that the volume honestly looks decent, but you know, I think Andor does. Yeah, it looks the best. And it's kind of sad that Andor, not that Andor isn't a great character, but it's kind of weird that Andor looks like it was done better than Obi-Wan, even though I really liked Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan was like pretty much everything I wanted. Like I can tell the difference in set quality between those two shows.
And that might be a Tony Gilroy thing too. He might be like, you know, I wanted to shoot this like a real, I would shoot a real movie. I don't need to be in this. You know, because as great as the volume is, it is kind of like just a
They
step
did
up
use the
from like a.
volume technology on the Batman though, so I know
Yeah,
a
they
lot of people
did.
don't
Right.
know
Well, that's
that,
the
but
thing.
yeah.
Like the whole Batmobile chase is in the volume, you know, which was wild because like
And
you
it was
can't tell when
also,
you watch
it
it.
was dark.
That's true.
They just Let's turn just say that adds a lot of stuff.
With that, is there anything else nerd popping, Brittany?
Yeah. So I don't remember if I've talked about it on this show, but I watched Yellowstone, which is that show with Kevin Costner. So it was funny because when I first saw the trailer for it originally, I thought it was a new show with Kevin Costner and Josh Holloway from Lost, because that was all the trailers that were out around the time. But it turns out the show had been on before that. And it started on the Country Music Channel, I think.
Yeah, that's the Cowboys show for white people. That's why I'm surprised you like it.
It's still on there, but Peacock has it. And so I've been watching it on Peacock, catching up, basically. And it's actually really, really good. It's basically cowboy mafia, like Soprano type of like, mm-hmm. you know, they're trying to keep this ranch and all these people are trying to take the ranch from them. And I don't know, Kevin Costner on the show makes me feel like he would have actually been a pretty good Batman. Every time I watch an episode, I'm like, he would have been a great Batman. So I could see him being like, you know, Bruce Wayne and the Batman Beyond type of thing. It's a great show.
Wait, Superman's dad is Batman?
Can you imagine?
That really brings it all together.
Batfleck would totally freak out if it turns out.
That would just funny. It's great. There's a couple of people you recognize from other stuff. So I don't know. I like it. It's fun. It's brutal. And I don't know. I just say give it a chance. I know some people are like, why, but it's fun.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with white people shows, man.
Hey, it's great white people drama.
Dominic, what is nerd popping on your end?
We didn't mention it. It's not really nerd popping. It's kind of shot in for the they took that Rogue Squadron movie off the schedule. And, you know, I don't want to like be like real harsh on people, but I was really not thinking it was a great idea because Wonder Woman 84 was such a terrible movie. I'm sorry. Monster and Wonder Woman are pretty good movies, but I think something happened, like maybe someone's ego got ahead of themselves or something and created this really terrible movie called Wonder Woman 84, which we don't, you know, which we happily we forgot in the midst of other 2020 stuff. And there's one really great scene in Wonder Woman 84, but sorry, that's for another day. Point is, I think it's okay because that Rogue Squadron movie is probably not a good idea. Anyway, Keith, yourself?
That's it. Your nerd problem is you're glad they took off Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was trying to be diplomatic about it, you know, because diplomatic mission.
And I think Lucasfilm is kind of like, they've said, we're not going to focus on movies for now. We're going to be just doing the streaming. So it makes sense that they would do that. But for me, I'm going to take it back to Marvel and toys. I don't know if you guys are familiar, there's a thing called HasLab, which is basically when Hasbro does a crowdfunding project. It's one of the, usually it's like a big toy that they can't necessarily make mass market and retail because it's just too cost prohibitive. So what they do is they set a target and they ask fans to, like, basically you're pledging to buy this thing and then they'll promise to make it if you pledge to buy it. It's kind of like, again, like a Kickstarter, and you have to reach a certain threshold. So a couple of things they've done in the past, they've done like a giant ass Galactus or a giant ass Sentinel figure.
Giant ass.
You know, just huge that they wouldn't be able to make. I recently backed the Cobra Hiss Tank for G.I. Joe Classified, which is this massive toy that they'll be putting out. They announced this week that the next HasLab in the Marvel Legends line is going to be Robbie Reyes's Hell Charger. So it's this giant Dodge Charger with glowing effects, LED lights. It's got tires on fire, and it comes with a Ghost Rider figure. And you can, when you stick him in the car, his head lights up. It's pretty impressive. But the collector community is a little pissed off because the asking price is $350. Yeah. So folks are like, you had me at hello, but then you told me the price and now I don't want to back it. Personally, I think it's
worth the usual range is. What's the range? How much was this?
Well, lately the HasLabs have been going up. Like the Hiss Tank was $350. Well, one of the incentives that Hasbro usually does those, like there are certain like stretch goals. So if they hit like 9,000 backers, you'll get this. If you hit 10,000 backers, you'll get that. So they're going to be adding other things if you reach a certain threshold when it comes
you
to that.
You have to do 350.
Yeah, 350 is the base price.
You can't just be like, I don't personally want this toy, but I know someone else might. So let me donate $50 to it.
No, it's not like that. You got to pledge the full price.
That's wild. Because, I mean, that sounded great until it was like 350.
Well, that's kind of that's the exact reaction for most of the collective community. Whoa, this is cool. And then they announced the price, like, hell no, I ain't paying for that. And that's the thing, if you don't reach your goal, like if they have like a goal of 9,000 backers, if they don't meet that 9,000 backer goal, then they won't make the toy.
I get that, but maybe they should have an option for people who just want to like donate as much as they can, but they unfortunately don't get the toy, and those who can't afford it, like I don't know.
It's basically we'll make it on demand. If we have if we can guarantee 9,000 people will pay this price for this toy, we'll make it. But if we can't guarantee that those 9,000 people want it, we ain't gonna make it. And that's kind of how
I so get it. At the same time, it's like you're kind of, you know, I don't know.
It's dope though.
Something I wouldn't mind.
I'm not even a huge Ghost Rider fan, and I'm tempted in getting it.
Is your dramatic conflict is whether or not to get this custom?
No, because I already backed the Cobra Hiss, so I'm already out like four bones on that. So I'm not trying to pay for a toy that I'm not that interested in, to be honest. I just think it's interesting that like the collector community is a little. Like basically the reaction was exactly Brittany's, like, wow, that sounds cool. Ooh, that looks cool. And then they announced a price. Like, hell no, I ain't paying that.
Well, no.
Kind of kind of begs, you know, what's the makeup of Ghost Rider's fandoms, you know, demographic.
Particularly the Robbie Reyes, though, right?
That's what makes me mad.
Because a lot of people were like, why can't it be Johnny Blaze? I'd pay for Johnny Blaze. And it's like, Robbie Reyes ain't worth it. But like, he got a car. Like, a car is going to be more expensive than a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. You kind of think, right?
I wouldn't mind, like, if they had it where you could just throw some money in it just to hope that it takes off and gets backed and I don't get the toy, I'd be okay with that just so someone else can potentially get it. But no, I'm not dropping no 350.
You just get the figure. Is it posable, at least, that sucker?
That's so cool. But yeah,
it's $350 cool.
It looks great.
Oh.
You see, there's some cool nerd movie where instead of having this debate, we just make a plan to steal this thing, so
you can get it. It's like National Treasure, but you steal the one.
Yeah, we just
like steal it, make like it fail. Well, because HasLabs have failed. They tried to HasLab a Rancor monster a couple years ago, and it wasn't impressive enough for people.
They were like, "We don't want it." Yeah, we can make that out of Play-Doh at home. It's not as impressive.
So I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty cool, but yeah,
it's 350 really. A really good Ghost Rider car. Looks wow. But back up, you did get the Hiss tank.
I did pledge for the Hiss tank,
which comes with what, the driver?
Well, it figure? Does, but that's the thing, the stretch goals were like, it comes with like four additional figures, so like a G.I. Joe classified figure is like $25 each, so that already knocks like $100 off the price.
Okay, I just seen the price.
that was a cool figure though. That was a cool pose.
But anyway, Brittany, how can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Hi Brittany Monet on social media and whatnot. And oh my God, the new handle for, well, if you were following before at Naomi Podcast, you're already following, but I think the new handle is at @LitCrew_pod, something like that. It's on my, if you go to my Twitter, you'll see it in the bio and you can click on it.
Dominic, how can people find you?
I'm Dominic Ma on Instagram or Twitter. I'm Dama, DOMMAH. And I was going to say earlier, you know, if you want to help me fund a new personal computer that works, you could contribute to my Ko-Fi. But now I'm also going to add, like, if you want to help Keith get a freaking Ghost Rider, you should Venmo him some shit. Just, you know, because, you know, the Christmas season is almost upon us. Just keep in mind. But anyway, that's all. Or just follow me on social media. That would be nice.
Is Dama your Ko-Fi too?
Yeah.
Is it Ko-Fi? I thought it was coffee.
I think it is. Well, yeah, it should be coffee. But then when you're saying it out loud,
you're like, just buy me a coffee.
To distinguish it from saying, buy me a coffee. Buy me a coffee. So for that purpose, I think it's Ko-Fi. Or fee, like rhyming with fee, right? No, now I don't actually know. And fuck.
But it's the K-O-F-I.
K-O-F-I.
Look up Dama.
That would be great.
You can find me on Twitter @TheRealChow, @_real_chow, and on Instagram @RealKeithChow. Follow the Nerds of Color @TheNerdsOfColor. Go to hardknockmedia.com to find this and all the podcasts in the Hard Knock family. Please give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. That's how people find our show. Support our Patreon at patreon.com/TheNerdsOfColor. Check out our videos at youtube.com/TheNerdsOfColor. Please like and subscribe there. And until next time.
I want Captain America too.
tubes
instead of the Iron Man 3s.
Yeah.
Did you see the whole wall of Avengers sneakers behind Pug and the...